Well, up next on our live Christmas Eve special, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us as we talk about the ghosts of Christmas and angels and Christmas. And yes, we'll take your calls as well right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, everybody. This is Ray Manzarek of The Doors. I want to wish everybody a very happy holiday season, a very blessed and loving and giving and good, warm feeling on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve. You all be good to each other. We got a new year coming, and we're going to celebrate 2011. And for God's sake, let's be good to one another.
Ray Manzarek, what a class guy. Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us now, a leading expert on the paranormal. She has researched, investigated, and written about the paranormal since 1983. What were you, 3 years old then, Rosemary, when you did that?
Just about, George. I think I started writing as soon as I could pick up a crayon.
That's funny. Probably one of the remote writing, right? They were beaming things to you. By the way, were you ever a listener of The Doors music?
I love The Doors, one of my favorite bands. And actually, I have a story on reincarnation involving Jim Morrison in my book, Tales of Reincarnation.
Oh, really? You want to tell it before we get into our ghost stories here?
Well, it came from one of his crew guys, Danny Sugarman. And Danny Sugarman now has passed on, too. And he told me about a story that Jim had related to him, that Jim believed that he had been a Buddhist monk in a monastery. And the two of them had been monks in the same monastery. And that he was paying a karmic price for some involvement with some drugs. And that he had withdrawn to the monastery as kind of a penance for it. And it was a very emotionally powerful experience for both of them. He recalled the details about their lives, and Sugarman was able to have past life recall involving this same life period as well. And he said it evoked themes in the life that they were leading at the present, too, because there were some of the same issues going on. And it's a unique story, and Danny had never really told it before.
Sure is. Ghosts of Christmas. I love the Charles Dickens story, The Ghosts of Christmas Past, Present, Yet to Come. Today, you know, as Joshua was saying, Rosemary, people have strange experiences at the holidays. What have you uncovered?
Well, they do, because it's such an emotionally laden time for people. And I have a collection of angel stories, you know, angel interventions at Christmas time. A lot of people are in crisis. I think at the holidays, when people do have problems like accidents and illnesses and grief over loss of loved ones, it takes increasingly intense for people than it is at other times of the year. And so angel interventions to help people with their lives seem to, it's hard to say that they're on the increase, but we certainly notice them more. And also when accidents and disasters happen at Christmas time, it seemed that the haunting phenomena of those are remembered more because of the times. And the tradition arose especially in England in the 19th century, and this is what sparked the inspiration for Charles Dickens. The tradition arose to tell ghost stories by the family hearthside on Christmas Eve. And a lot of these stories were, some of them were legends and some of them were real stories about accidents that had happened and the ghostly phenomena that still lingered on. And Dickens used that tradition to marry to his, he had kind of a social crusade to tell the plight of the poor. And that's how we got the story to Christmas Carol.
Well, you know, it's one of those classics, and I love it every year, and I really like the real old original movie. I mean, it just does something to you, especially when he's in that room, his bedroom, all by himself. It is something else. You know, are you, with your research into angels, are you now convinced that these angels exist, or are you tipping toward the person, the individual, is somehow manifesting this himself or herself, that they're creating whatever we think would be angelic, they're doing it.
Sometimes it's hard to know, and I think it's a little bit of both in many cases, because we have to interpret our own extraordinary experiences, and people are going to find explanations that make sense to them, that resonate to them. So some people may be inclined to see spirit intervention as angelic. But I do believe in angels, and I do believe that they come and intervene in our affairs, usually at times when we need some sort of turning point. And their job is not to pull our chestnuts out of the fire, but to help us get through something so that we can move on into a more enlightened life. And also at Christmas time, you have a lot of people focused on family issues. And when I collected angel stories some years ago for I Bring You Glad Tidings, a lot of these had to do with separation, pain, loss, domestic issues, losing someone that you loved, and then having some sort of manifestation involving an angel at this particular time to help people through that. And one of the stories, I have posted one of my stories on my webpage, on my blog, visionaryliving.com, and also on the Fate magazine page. I'm an editor of Fate magazine. And
do a great job on that, Rosemary, by the way.
Thank you. And that involves a young woman who, she, through various personal tragedies in her life, such as her father's suicide and the suicide of a friend's father, she kind of got on the wrong path and got into alcohol and drugs and really wasn't doing very well in life. And she said she was just kind of swirling down the drain. And when Christmas Eve, she went out partying with her friends at a bar. And when she went up to the bar to get another round of drinks, there was an unusual man sitting at the bar who seemed to have like a glow around him. And he turned to her and he said, "You don't need to do this, you know." And it kind of took her back because this was a stranger. And he started talking to her about her life. He seemed to know everything about her life. And she had this what seemed like a very long conversation with him. And went back to the table without the drinks. And her friend said, "Hey, what's going on?" She said, "Well, I was just talking to this man up at the bar. He just seemed to know everything about me." And she turned around a point, and the stool was empty. There was a full glass of beer sitting where the man had been. And they said, "There's nobody there. We would have seen this guy." But the conversation was her turning point. And she came to believe that she'd been visited by an angel. At first, she didn't want to think that, because angels were supposed to be these winged things who flew down out of heaven. And then she realized if you needed angelic help, they would certainly meet you at the place where you needed it. And she got her life together, went through rehab, and when she, 10 years had passed when she told me that story, and it was very powerful for her. But those are the kinds of interventions that people experience.
That's a great story. Let's take some calls here, Rosemary, while we chat with you. We're going to Birmingham, England. Keith is with us on the Wild Card line. Merry Christmas, Keith.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to just tell you a little bit about an experience I had a few years ago.
Sure, love to hear it.
I make myself available to help people wherever I can, and I am privileged in some ways to hear God speak to me clearly. And I was busy helping somebody who was an alcoholic at one time, and I'd booked up to help them for a couple of weeks when God spoke to me quite clearly and asked me to help someone else. And, of course, I was busy. I didn't want to do this. And over the course of 2 weeks, I got this order several times because it appeared to be a serious situation. And then I started to get another friend of mine ringing me up who said basically a similar message, confirming and saying, "Yes, you need to do this." So it turned out this other person was having a breakdown, and it was looking pretty serious. They were falling to bits. So the instruction was to bring them home to my house and to help them wherever I could. And it turned out that then I heard the Lord clearly again, and I got more instructions that in order for this person to be helped, she would have to work through all her stuff, this particular stuff she was working through. And he said it would take 2 weeks. And what I needed to do was be available, and she would have a series of dreams, and each dream would reveal more stuff that needed to be worked through. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, she would be healed. And so we did this, and we kept a diary of it and so on. And at the end of the 2 weeks, we sat down and we were praying, and she had a vision. And at the end of that, she was healed of all of that trauma for the whole 2 weeks. Everything she put on the table was healed.
Well, and how do you assess that, Rosemary?
Well, it's a beautiful story, and I've encountered a lot of miracles of healing like that. Our dreams seem to be conduits quite often for healing energy. And I think that these energies really are heightened at this particular time because there is such a concentration of the collective on the miraculous, on interventions from heaven, on hope, on renewal. It's a very powerful energy that I think does affect people in miraculous ways.
Yeah, I think so too. Next up, we go to Bill in Jonesboro, Arkansas, first-time caller. Merry Christmas, Bill. Go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you, George. Merry Christmas to you. I'm a great admirer of yours.
Thank you.
And Rosemary sounds wonderful. And anyway, I'll try to make this ad. Two experiences, both with the death of my wife. We worked together. We were together 24 hours a day, and driving from Memphis to Jonesboro, I would get sleepy. And in December, she would get mad because she couldn't see at night. So anyway, we had a little tip. I got out of the car, I walked down the car. She got out of the car, and she walked right into a car that was going 70 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
And I yelled. My back was turned, so I didn't see it, but this. I said, my God, a truck had a flat tire. That was the sound. And then I saw this form in the road, and then another car ran over her body. And I don't know why I'm still here. I just ran out without even looking to take her broken body off. But anyway, so the night before...
Oh, Bill, you there? Let's see if we... I'll put you on hold, and let's see, Will, if you can... dig him back up if his line comes back and call him back, because I'd love to hear the rest of that story. But can you imagine that, Rosemary? You get into a fight with your loved one, and she gets out of the car and gets killed by a car? Oh, my God.
It's got to be an emotional shock that would be devastating to anyone. And
that might have been his wife, by the way, from the hereafter, who disconnected his phone line.
Well, sometimes strange things happen.
Well, as you know, you and I wrote the book that's coming out next year, Talking to the Dead. There's a lot of weird things out there.
And sometimes when we start talking about our experiences, there are strange phenomena that happen around them. But the emotional devastation of that would have an impact on someone that could affect someone for decades, for the rest of their lives.
Next up, we go to... Clifford in Pendleton, Oregon. There you go, Clifford, west of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's an honor to talk to you.
It's an honor to have you on. Thank you.
I've been a fan of Coast to Coast for like over a decade. But I got a quick story I'm going to tell you. This is kind of trippy. I believe it was a ghost. But when me and my kids' mom got together on our first date, we decided to head out to the res where she lived, reservation. And we were kicking back one night, and we were sitting there talking and whatnot about our lives and whatnot. And I had been getting, kind of tipsy, right? But what happened anyway, to make a long story short, is I ended up having a breakdown talking about my ex and my kid that I don't get to see. And so I ended up flipping out, opening the back door, and I'm just cursing God, right? Really bad, like... just blasphemy and everything. I was just being, totally wrong. And anyway, all of a sudden, there's a toy in the middle of her floor, which is my stepson's toy, and it starts going off. It goes in, 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 in. he goes, thank you for playing with Leapfrog. She jumps up and she goes, that's not supposed to be happening. She goes, my kid was just upset today because there was no batteries in it, and he was trying to get me to go down to the dollar store to get him batteries so he can play with it, and he was upset about it. She runs over and grabs it, and there's no batteries in it. And not only that, the on and off switch was off.
Oh,
and I was just like, oh, my gosh. She looks at me, and she says, you really need to watch who you're cursing in my home. She goes, oh, my gosh, this is just crazy. I was just like, oh, no. I couldn't believe it. But that was my it's an absolutely true story. And the irony of this is my nickname is Frog. I've been called Frog since I was like 9 years old. And just for it to say, thank you for playing with Leapfrog, it was just creepy.
I love it. See, messages come, Rosemary, in all ways. I think Bob from Jonesboro, Arkansas is back on the line with us there. There you go, Bob. Did you get through again?
Hello. Yes. Oh, well, thank you so much for accepting my call again.
Sure.
So anyway, so the night before her, she loved Christmas decoration. So I had to go out there, you know, at age 60 years old and put up all this stuff and everything. I said, we can't even see it. It's for the neighbors. But anyway, she loved that. We had a nice storm here in Jonesboro. This was back in 2008.
Yeah.
And so I went out there to take pictures. And in one of the I always took two pictures. And in the first picture I took, there was this perfectly round, huge white light, perfectly round, in the trees. And that was, I mean, I showed it to my brother and, you know, my other relatives. They could say, well, that must be a reflection. I said, no, it can't be.
That was her.
Perfectly round white light, which I've been told by other paranormals means that the spirit is there. And
tell
then,
me about
Let's
get Rosemary to analyze that first of all here, Bob. Tell me about these kind of visitations. They come like orbs, don't they?
They do, and I think that we are visited by light manifestations often when we need them. And they can be balls of light, pillars of light. Sometimes they're interpreted as angels. Sometimes people know that they are the presence of someone who has died, who has come to be present and to comfort them. And also the story like the toy, the toys, the things that go on and off by themselves, no batteries, Christmas lights that go on and off. These are all often given as signs to people of reassurance and comfort.
Rosemary, what are you doing on Christmas?
I'm taking it easy with friends, having a nice dinner with friends and some family, some of their family members. My own family is far away in Seattle, and I'm in Connecticut. It's a very relaxed time for me, and I celebrate Christmas, too, as a time of renewal. I think people reassess their lives, the direction that they're going in. They concentrate on the virtues, and it's spiritually renewing.
Yeah, well, it sure is. It's a great time. And any trips coming up for you after Christmas into the new year?
Well, yes. In fact, I'm going to be out on the West Coast. In fact, I'm going to be in San Diego and L.A. for a few days in February.
I'll be out there, so let's all get together.
We can connect. Just putting that trip together, and Kansas in March, I have a big UFO conference that I'm speaking at. So travel will be kicking up a little early for me this year.
Great. Rosemary, thanks, and once again, have a great Christmas. Rosemary's website, visionaryliving.com. Up next, Dr. Roger Lear joins us, the alien implant doctor. So get ready for him. You know, it is tradition here at Coast to Coast to also honor our fighting men and women and soldiers, indeed. It wouldn't be Christmas without a Marine's Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give and to see just who in this home did live. As I looked all about, a strange sight I did see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stocking by the fire, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of a far distant land, with medals and badges, awards of all kind. A sobering thought soon came to my mind, for this house was different. Unlike any I'd seen, this was the home of a U.S. Marine. I'd heard stories about them. I had to see more. So I walked down the hall and pushed open the door. And there he lay, sleeping, silent, alone, curled up on the floor in his one-bedroom home. He seemed so gentle, his face so serene. Not how I pictured a U.S. Marine. Was this the hero of whom I'd just read, curled up in his poncho? A floor for his bed? His head was clean-shaven, his weathered face tanned. I soon understood this was more than a man. For I realized the families that I saw that night owed their lives to these men who were willing to fight. Soon, around the nation, the children would play, and grown-ups would celebrate on a bright Christmas Day. They all enjoyed freedom each month and all year because of Marines like this one lying here. I couldn't help wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in a land far from home. Just the very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knees and I started to cry. He must have awoken, for I heard a rough voice. Santa, don't cry. This life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. With that, he rolled over, drifted off into sleep. I couldn't control it. I continued to weep. I watched him for hours, so silent and still. I noticed he shivered from the cold night's chill. So I took off my jacket, the one made of red, and covered this Marine from his toes to his head. Then I put on his t-shirt of scarlet and gold, with an eagle, globe, and anchor emblazoned so bold. And although it barely fit me, I began to swell with pride. And for one shining moment, I was Marine Corps, deep inside. I didn't want to leave him so quiet in the night, this guardian of honor, so willing to fight. But half asleep, he rolled over, and in a voice clean and pure, said, "Carry on, Santa. It's Christmas Day, all secure." One look at my watch, and I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend. Semper Fi, and good night.
Hi there, Coast to Coast listeners. This is Bill Momi from the Twilight Zone, Lost in Space, Babylon 5, etc. Wishing every sentient being in the universe, as well as those in the cornfield, peaceful and happy holidays.
Billy Momi. Dr. Roger Lear, said to be one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence involving research of ufology. He and his surgical team have performed numerous surgeries on apparent alien abductees. Here's Dr. Roger Lear this Christmas Eve. Roger, Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Merry Christmas to you, George. How are you this evening?
Great. This is one of the times you weren't behind the secret door. You didn't have to disguise yourself.
Like that's right. Just a plain old me celebrating a down-home Christmas.
Well, you know what? Tom arranged this Christmas show for us, and as he was putting it together, he said, what do you think? I think I'll have Dr. Roger Lear on for you. And I said, what are we going to have the alien surgeon on for? And he said, because it's Christmas. And here you are.
Yeah, I talked to Tom, and he says, well, I said, what do you want me to talk about? And he says, Christmas, of course. So I just want to know, as we begin here, how does the world's most famous late-night talk show host spend Christmas Eve?
With you and with all our listeners, and you know what? I'll keep doing it as long as it's on a day that I'm working. And if it's a day that our weekend guys aren't available, I'll work that too. It's a tradition for me, Roger.
Well, George, you're one and then a few, and I'm sure that most of the listeners out there appreciate what you do, and certainly the researchers that you have on the show do. We take the holidays quite seriously here. You probably didn't know, but I have a minor skill in playing a large theater organ. So we just got off the organ playing Christmas carols.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that there is an organ next to the phone where you are?
Absolutely. I'm looking at it right
oh,
now.
Would you?
In the same room.
Would you? Would you play one for us?
Oh, I'd have to fire it up and get it going, and by that time, at least 3 good minutes would go by, and you wouldn't.
Well, while it's fired up, we'll still talk. Come on, Raj.
We'll do it. We'll make arrangements to do it another time, I promise.
All right.
Yeah, we even invited a baker,
humbug.
A baker here tonight. And I brought in a cow.
What do you mean you brought in a cow?
Yeah, we brought a cow into the house, and I had a baker come, you know, one of those guys that bakes.
Okay. Is the cow alive?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it going to be alive tomorrow?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, how else would you get cookies and milk for Santa?
Well, that's true, too. So tell me about your life as Santa. I'm sure you played it.
Oh, yes, many times over. We had all the kids and the grandkids over and had a nice dinner, which we do as an annual ritual. My niece, unfortunately, Bridget, couldn't be here tonight. So if she's listening out there, feel better and have a good life, Bridget. But we have a good time, and it's just a family time of the year, and we try and get together and enjoy it. Some of the presents are exchanged tonight. More will be exchanged in the morning.
We're going to take some calls here, Raj, but before we do, L.A. Marzulli was on with me this week, just raving about you and your work. What's new in the area of alien abductions and implant removal?
Well, we have, you know, done some really astounding research with the help of our science advisory board from ANS Research, and we're working more on the specific data of tracking to see where these elements are coming from that are used in the manufacture, and I don't mind using that term now. These objects are manufactured in their nanotechnological objects. And we had, you know, the last show we did, we had on two of our scientists, Dr. Kuntz and Steve, on, and they, you know, made these mathematical calculations. Now, some of this is over my head, to tell you the truth. But at least I want to remind folks that are listening that the materials come from at least 80 million light years away from here. And just as our Uncle Stan Friedman says, if you live in New York, you really wouldn't go to New Jersey to buy a loaf of bread. So it's a fairly good assumption that if the materials come from that area of the universe, and the manufacturers are also in the same area.
You know, Rod, you're in a field that not a lot of people jump into. You've been doing it for a long, long time now. What is your conclusion about most of these now? What's happening? Why is it being done?
I've come 180 degrees since I started this, and most of my career in this field has been one synchronistic event after another. But I started, remember, George, as a scientific skeptic. I was the guy that said, okay, you know, I believe it, you know, historical record and what people are seeing. There are things flying around in our skies, and they're probably controlled. Somebody's flying them. But when it came to abductions, it was a bit of a stretch. And at that time when I started, remember, abductions were not really accepted by the majority of serious researchers. It was extreme doubt. Even Mutual UFO Network, MOFON, and the other organizations were not, you know, taking abductions seriously. Even after Betty and Barney Hill and some of the other famous cases, Travis Walton and Whitley Strieber and so on, they just were not taken seriously. So I watched this evolve, and then someone came to me with the possibility of implants. And I that was unfathomable. I could not take that in at all. So here we've gone now 180 degrees where we've done 16 surgeries and come up with some, you know, solid objects that you can hold and put under a microscope and do those accepted scientific tests on. And so it's been quite a ride. And we expect in the future that these little tiny objects can give us more clues than probably any other piece of physical evidence in relation to the entire field of ufology.
Yeah, one day you're going to break a story on Coast to Coast, Roger, that will knock everybody's socks off. I feel it coming. It's going to happen. The more and more you do this, you're going to get to a point where it is so obvious that something's going on that I don't even think mainstream science can say no anymore.
Well, there's more and more people that are going beyond idle curiosity, because I get calls and emails from people who are in academic science and are really taking this subject seriously and asking me questions. And I don't want to let any kitty cats out of the bag, but we are trying desperately at the moment to get a peer-reviewed a paper done on a scientific journal, and it very well for the first time may happen. And if that does happen, the Coast to Coast audience is going to be the first one to find out.
Super. Let's take some calls. They won't be alien implant related, but have some fun with some Christmas calls with us, Roger. Let's go to sure. Bob in Vero Beach, Florida, east of the Rockies. Bob, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you very much, George. Hey, you know, it's my first time calling, you know, it's I've listened to you for a long time.
Thank you.
And it's funny, when you guys give out the number to call, especially for the east of the Rockies number, it goes so fast. I think I've missed it like 24 times. Every time they say the number, it's like boom, and it's fast. No, I was going to talk about a few other things, but now, you know what, it's okay. You know, you have this person of incredible knowledge on, and, you know, one of the things about dismemberment, and I hear it a lot, and I hear about how, and you've had also a woman on your show, and she's talked about this, and she's written books about it.
That's Linda Moulton Howe.
Exactly. A wonderful. I believe all of these things. I'm not somebody who's a skeptic here, but what I want to know is if they are so superior in air travel and they are so superior in you know, maybe finding these wormholes and going through and time traveling. And I think, you know, when we hear about these abductions, and we're assuming, like, whether this is going to be a situation like the third kind, you know, that these people are going to come back and they're going to be basically, because of space travel and through Einstein's theories, that these people are going to not have aged. It just seems to me that the surgery they're doing is so pedestrian compared to the knowledge they have of space flight. I don't understand why they're doing these. I think they are doing these things. I can't imagine anyone else doing it. But why are they doing these simple operations when? I would think there's so. I mean, don't we agree that I think some of it is very true with these aliens from outer space that they are so ahead of us.
No question. And the surgeries, Bob, you know, are being done with technology that is very high. Meaning it looks exactly, you know, perfectly cut lines and everything else. And there's no blood at any of the sites where these. Mutilated.
But isn't that a laser surgery type?
It could be. Let's find out from Roger. Roger, what do you think is going on with these mutilations?
Well, if we're talking about the cattle, which I assume we are, there are things that, in the first place, are not evident to the public at large. there are some myths that have become popularized, and I'm not here to debunk anything either, as you know. For example, they say that the animals are bloodless. That's unfortunately not true. Their blood is there, but it's in an extremely powdered, coagulated state. Large amounts of the iron from the hemoglobin are on the wound edges. The wounds are cookie cutter, which is absolutely true, and evidently they represent a technology which uses energy for surgical excision or surgical incision, which is not too far from what you've seen by Gene Roddenberry on Star Trek. Now, why is all this going on? I discussed this with one of our scientists who is one of the leading geneticists in the world, and he informed me that the majority of all fluids used in biological research having to do with DNA is, guess what? Bovine serum.
Interesting.
So bovine serum alone has some very important value. And if there is a genetic, a worldwide genetic experiment or a genetic procedure that's in use, I believe that the human race is being genetically manipulated, and I've come to that conclusion some time ago. Then the next step is quite simple. And when you talk about the complexity of the subject, it's like taking a nut and you crack it a little at a time. And as the cracks develop, each little piece seems to fall in place. So, I you know, let me be the first to say I don't have all the answers. And all I can give you is, some of it's my theoretical opinion.
Understand. Let's see, grab one more call if we can. Roger, Dallas, Texas, we go. Chris, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, no, it's not a problem. It's been an interesting conversation to take part in. So.
As we move along, that's right.
Yeah. But, the whole time I've been listening, I've been listening since the show started. And by the way, I love the show, George, but you always have such great guests. I've been thinking recently, because of the holidays and all this such that's been going on here, always close to the end of the year, everyone starts, like one of your previous guests said, everyone starts, thinking collectively. And we've been talking a lot about ghosts this evening and, paranormal events, that kind of thing. And every year when this comes up, it always draws me back because I'm very interested and always have been interested in Nikola Tesla's work with electromagnetic fields and
a true genius.
And the theory of transporting energy through space and time without a physical means. So I've always wondered if there was like some kind of a nether that connected us all. And that by our collective thought, or if we were in a certain place at a certain time and this cloud of some kind was there.
There is no question that we are connected to what I have always said is the wireless internet. It's out there. It's out there. And I think Tesla knew that. Dr. Roger Lear has been our guest. Merry Christmas to you, Roger, and your family. You take care of yourself. Up next, the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe on Coast to Coast AM.